Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 143. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing glorious. I'm just enjoying some nice tea here in the afternoon, trying to get my calmness together, practicing, you know, a little Tai Chi, just trying to get a good balance to start the week off with.
I like it. John, in the world of texting, do you know what 143 means?
No, but I can frantically Google.
Okay, you start Googling. Let me know when you got the answer. This is a quiz. I'm going to give you 10 seconds. What does 143 mean if I text it to you? Let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
What is it, buddy?
I love you.
You're right!
Why do I know that you're just going to use it as a soundboard now?
Yeah, John, you love me. I got you to say you love me. That was all I wanted to do.
This was all a grand trick for Pete's stupid soundboard of John quotes. So.
Oh, yeah, that will be on every episode from this point forward. John loves me. It's good. But John, you know what I do love more than you? The good migration story. And that's what we have today, man. We've got a couple of guys that are going to come on. And because it's a VMware Cloud on AWS migration story, we need to bring on one of our VMC resident experts. And that is Mr. Glenn Sizemore. Glenn, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, don't worry, John. Trust me, you can trust Pete. It's not like you'll say something and then for the next, 8 years, he's just going to randomly drop it regardless of what company you work at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, some things never die, that's for sure. Glenn, thank you for joining us. We've got a great story today. There's some folks that we know from a company called Round Tower. They've been doing some really good work, doing some VMware Cloud on AWS migrations. And so we want to bring these gentlemen on. They've been doing some good stuff, and we want to hear how it's going for them. So starting with a good friend of mine, Mr. Adam Fisher. Adam, how you doing, buddy?
Great, Pete. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Adam's been doing a lot of VMware work. He's also a Veeam Vanguard, so we came to know him through that as well. And definitely looking forward to hearing this story today, Adam. But you're not alone. You're with one of your partners in crime, Mr. Paul Craddock. Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, everyone. Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, man. And if you didn't know, 143 means I love you. So
I did. I do now. I'm going to use that later. Just text my wife that. So hopefully
there you go.
Points.
There you go. Awesome. All right. So listen, I was talking to Adam over lunch the other day. We both live in Raleigh, and he was telling me some really good stories about, some of the work he's been doing at Round Tower. And it motivated me to, I thought, man, this would make for a great conversation for the podcast. And so that's why we're here. And so Adam or Paul, why don't you guys start with telling me about what Round Tower is and what you guys do?
I can take that one. So Round Tower, we're about 13 years old right now. We were born in kind of the data center backup space, and over the last few years expanded to include all practices, right? Security, end user compute, ServiceNow, cloud, DevOps, some IoT now. And so part of that VMC falls into, right? So myself and Adam work in the cloud DevOps practice. So that's AWS, it's Azure, it's a little GCP and VMware Cloud as well.
I like it. And so you guys are doing migrations, and you're probably telling your customers, this is some of the value of doing a migration to VMC. So what are the pain points that you're seeing that VMC answers?
Yeah, so one of the biggest ones that we saw for one of the first clients we moved was, twofold. One was speed to market, right? So if you have a very limited time to get out of a data center, VMC is one of the best answers for that. So that's the first one. The second one that we saw, it was actually a bit of a niche use case, was we had a client who had a lot of Oracle and Oracle Rack specifically. And if you want to lift Oracle Rack, VMC is the only way to do it. It's the only way to share disks still within a cloud environment.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, and certainly I would also say that, getting to Paul's point about the speed of spinning up one of those environments, DR is a big use case that we've seen as well for customers that don't have that DR space right now and don't want to plan building out a whole second physical site when you have the ability to really spin one up in the cloud at your fingertips.
So I had a question on Oracle. You're talking about running Rack and that with the the shared disk access. For the migration of that, though, what does that look like on moving that? Do you do like data guard and do like an async fail in at the app layer?
Yep.
Do you just do a backup and restore? So data guard's the lowest way to migrate that in.
Yeah. The problem, I mean, you got a couple options, but the problem for most people we work with is a lot of those are production, right? So you can't just take them down and then bring them back up, you know, and HCX won't protect those workloads. So there's definitely some things you have to do around that. App layer is one of the better ways to do that. The other way you could do it is you could try to break the rack cluster into single node and then send it up and then rebuild it. But that's a lot of overhead and probably not the best answer.
Oh, I see. Like strip it down to outer rack as a single node, use HCX to do the migration and then rebuild.
Yeah.
But DataGuard, for those of you who don't work in the Oracle land, is an asynchronous replication method that's really, really low, like the last transaction spewed out on the wire. So it does make your stop-start failover pretty quick. And that gets back to, I guess, some of the questions on strategies. It sounds like, you know, HCX has a lot of benefits from a catch-all, but then, you know, you do have to occasionally think about some of those outliers, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, HCX is an amazing product. One of the pain points, because you asked earlier what some of the pain points were, is it's still based on vSphere replication. And as much as I love that, it still has some downsides, right? Once it's protecting a disk, you've got issues around expanding disks. And so there's other things to be thought of. How long is your migration going to be? You know, you're going to be replicating a bunch of VMs for months operationally, how you deal with some of that. So there's definitely a lot to that.
So let's start with that. Like when you talk to a customer and say, let's get you to VMC, what does that look like? Is it a non-disruptive process?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the use case. And a lot depends upon what the customer is trying to do and what their existing infrastructure looks like. I would say that certainly it is very non-disruptive from a planning standpoint and from spinning up the SDDC in the cloud for sure. But then there are certainly a lot of considerations once you get things spun up. And if you're looking to configure things in a hybrid method, you know, there are a lot of considerations there. But on the front end, it's definitely non-disruptive and takes a lot of the same design principles and assessments that you typically would do for any customer with their on-prem environment. Just, of course, you have the twist of, you know, now we're talking about hybrid cloud and how does that fit into what you have today?
Yeah, this is really what kind of muddles this whole space and why we need people such as Adam and Paul to go in and help customers really kind of realize this transition, because it depends on what they're trying to do, right? If it really is just a simple data center evacuation and it's just a lift and shift, look, we've got a power upgrade or we're flipping providers, but we don't want to buy new gear, then VMC gives you this really clean way to rent a production ready data center for a short period of time. And in those scenarios, we do see customers just do a straight lift and shift using something like HCX. And in those scenarios, it is the ideal solution for those customers, because using the power of VR, we get the scale to be able to bring up thousands of applications in parallel, do mass migrations into VMC, but more importantly, be able to orchestrate and schedule these things, right? Because we don't want ops teams sitting around for 2.5 weeks monitoring, you know, 10 VMs at a time, making that skip from on-premises up to the cloud. But something that I think we should actually dive into a little bit deeper isn't the data center evacuation use case, because that's kind of straightforward, right? It's just a big bulk migration. And yes, you should know that we can do that if you need it. But where it gets real tricky is that hybrid cloud use case, because there it honestly, this becomes 99% networking, 1% compute and everything else.
Yeah, definitely. And we've certainly seen that. I mean, there's a lot of, with HCX, you have the ability to do layer 2 network extensions. And it's great. It works. You click a button and all of a sudden you can run a workload with the same IP address in the cloud that you're running on-prem, and everything talks and it's all, you know, it's all good. It's what you expect and what you see on paper. But you still have the notion of everything having to route from the on-prem site to be able to communicate. So you're adding latency. There's a lot of other variables that come in. So while you can run those workloads up there, other things start happening. You start going, hey, where did this come from? And we didn't expect this to happen. So there's a lot of really digging into the details that get important. when you talk about that hybrid connectivity.
Yeah, you guys were sharing a story earlier that I'm going to go ahead and pull your string, and I'd like you to repeat it for the podcast so the listeners can hear it as well. Because we recently launched a feature that sort of addresses this, right? Gives you the ability to kind of control how your network flows are going to go and perhaps remove some of that tromboning effect. But even that can create a scenario where the customer inadvertently, you know, because when you're dealing with extended architecture where you have some of your infrastructure running inside the Amazon cloud being managed by VMware, and then some of your infrastructure running somewhere else that you manage, logically managing that as one big entity can get kind of complex at times, right?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, you then have the notion of if any of your workloads need to talk out to the internet, they're now going direct from VMC instead of from your infrastructure where you can kind of manage that traffic and keep an eye on it. Not to say that you can't do that within VMC, but it's sort of the planning and knowing, hey, when this workload lives in the cloud and everything is going to stay up there, what considerations do we really have to take into account more so than just, hey, this VM can talk to this other one and I don't have to change an IP address?
Yeah, and we have that conversation a lot with a lot of customers, right? One of the upsides of HCX and stretching is that your security teams are going to love it because your firewalls are still in play, your IDS, IPS is still in play, all the security measures all still in play. The downside is latency, right? And so there's that balance of, yeah, I add some latency, I add egress cost if I really look at that, although that tends to be kind of nominal when you really start to get into it. But if you flip on proximity routing, which is kind of what we're talking about here, I bypass all that. So now my security teams are no longer happy and I have to really think and architect, especially in a hybrid world, how do I have security on both sides of this hybrid solution? So it's definitely something to keep in mind.
So to clarify here, I don't claim to be an expert in this area, but the proximity routing, that is at layer two, it determining which things are, or it basically being able to split the routing table and keep stuff from having to hairpin through one side or the other. Is that a layer two or layer three? Kind of like some of the old VRP extended stuff like that.
Yeah. And Glenn can probably get into it a little bit deeper than I can, but it's essentially having, if you're in VMC, you have a very targeted route for that VM that's up there that says, hey, if I need to go outbound, I talk to the gateway on the NSXT side to take care of me because it's a closer gateway, instead of going back down prem. You know, I basically have a very targeted route for that machine.
How does that work for inbound? Do you use BGP to make both sites active? Or is this just for outbound traffic and you've got two different NAT endpoints?
Yeah, it's just gonna follow it back in on whatever the outbound was. This is based on outbound, so it's trying to remove that only trombone on the hairpin, so that you know if you've got a service endpoint that's running up inside VMC, but you know as Paul was saying, all your corporate firewalls and gateways are on premises, and you just do a stretch layer two. Well, now your actual path out to the world involves all traffic going back across whatever your connection to that on-premises data center is through that gear and then back out. And maybe that's what you want, but you know, maybe it isn't, right? Maybe we're actually doing something a little more sophisticated. We're taking an advantage of some cloud services and offloading some of these features into the AWS cloud, in which case we would want a more direct route, either directly through the IGW out to the internet or maybe out through the AZ for some additional services. So it's really just about making the network routing inside VMC more resilient. Because as I said, when you start connecting core data centers, which is what we're doing when we spin up a VMC SDDC, this is a core data center. The network is 99% of the problem, particularly when we're talking about a service, right? I mean, look, the compute and storage aspects of this are taken care of. You just tell us how much you need and we're going to deal with the rest. Yep. There are no additional questions. Just how much compute, how much storage, we've got it from there, folks. When it comes to the network, there's a reason there's a whole panel with lots of options for how you connect it and how you configure it and what your MTUs are and what the route tables and how they flow, because you need to be able to plug these STDCs into what are very complex customer environments.
Well, and that sounds like you have to ask some intrinsic questions of this core data center that I am choosing to hairpin or not hairpin through. Is its networking really that resilient? Is it more important that the service be available to the rest of the world or to the core data center? You know, and then also from a security, like making sure you have all that firewall and governance, that does seem to put an impetus on stop letting the network team have 20 different magic black boxes that all, you know, have their own configurations chiseled into their NVRAM or their SD cards. And instead, actually moving that configuration, your layer four stuff into NSX, maybe some of your load balancing into your AVI networks. You know, we've got that new shininess. Or if you've got Palo Alto or other various inspection devices, integrating that through NSX through the service insertion, rather than have all these random bump in a wire boxes, because migrating that can be its own hell if you don't have this in a policy-based situation that's going to follow the VM cleanly into the cloud.
Yeah. You know, one of the other things that gets complicated is then throw in the, hey, what happens if your core data center goes offline? Do you want your VMs to continue to operate in VMC? Because they won't if you don't do it right. So that's another huge conversation you have to have.
And if you were deploying VMC partly because of resiliency concerns in your core data center, do you want to be dependent upon it? That's kind of that root question you have to ask yourself.
Yeah, and this is really why we rely upon partners and experts, and because the answer really is it depends. It depends on what you're trying to do. It depends on what your current investment looks like, what your problem looks like, whether we're dealing with a greenfield or a gray installation. Like, all these factors will actually change the answer, right? And will steer us towards one solution versus the other. And really, the thing that we're trying to get across, or at least I try to get across when I talk to customers about this, is the answer is yes. Regardless of what your question is, yes, we can do it. The real question is, can you afford it?
Yeah, good point. Yeah. So Adam or Paul, I'm curious. I know, you know, obviously the proximity routing was certainly one thing, but you've done these a couple of times now. What are some of the things that you learned, whether it was positive or negative, in venturing into this world of migrating companies to VMC?
You know, really just kind of piggybacking off of what everyone said before, for me personally, I have gotten very much deeper into the world of networking than I expected to this point, or really had the need to. Because, you know, like Glenn mentioned, at the end of the day, we're spinning up a VMware data center in the cloud. And it's a completely new separate site. And that's the easy part. We all know VMware, we all know how to administer it day in, day out. How do you connect these things? And what is your use case that really will define what that connectivity is? So it's been a good learning experience for me to just build my network chops. So that's been, you know, one of the positives from my standpoint.
I think for me, two things. One is if you get into doing this, you will need to know more AWS than you maybe initially were thinking. And maybe that's an upside or a downside. Depends on, I guess, who you are and what you think of AWS, right? You'll need to get into the back end for a little bit, at least a lot around networking security groups, at least. But and the second thing is lifting a VM or a set of VMs, that's easy. What we don't see Adam and I spend a lot of our time doing is rationalizing those into applications and then realizing that application has a spider web of interconnectivity to every other application. So now how do you decide which goes, you know, in what wave? Because a lot of times big bang, like lift all 500 VMs and cut over 150 apps in one weekend, probably not the best idea.
Yeah.
So we have to say, okay, where do I subdivide that?
And yeah, what are the dependencies?
Bad. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, exactly. In which case do you have some middleware? I think back to the days where people would say, hey, don't run with Horizon, don't run Composer over the wire because some Java messaging service just implodes when it gets above 5 milliseconds. You need to kind of think of like, where are those crutch points that if latency gets high, this all goes to complete hell and I need to move those two things together, you know, but what needs to follow that too? It's kind of a fun.
In a lot of cases though, it's unfortunately like, I don't think anybody knows the answer to that question until it breaks. Right. You move that one VM and all of a sudden ERP processing goes from instant to 10 minutes and it takes a week to figure out, oh, here's what happened. You know, we have tools that can significantly simplify this. We don't see enough customers actually leveraging them, right? They can get in there with Network Insight and get full visibility into what those paths are, what those flows are, before we ever get to the point of doing any migrations. Just like, you know, we can get in there with Live Optics, do data-driven assessments, you know exactly how much compute storage memory we need inside an SDDC. Unfortunately, there's a lot of customers out there that just think they know everything and they just, you know, they want to run the show. And that's fine. You know, if you have your expertise and you just want us, this is how much compute, this is how much storage, we've got the rest. Sure. But just know that like there are some pitfalls here. And this is the stuff that we see customers tripping into, not doing full discovery. They get halfway through a migration and find out, oh yeah, we did have a dependency here that we didn't know about.
Even if you're not going to do a full NetFlow collection and do like VRNI, you can always just go, you know, poor man's hack and just log into every database, run a netstat and be like, okay, what the hell's talking on port 1433 to this box?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the great things also that is, it, you know, it really gets customers talking about their infrastructure and maybe looking at it in different ways than they need to when they're just dealing with things day in, day out. So it's a good exercise in taking a look at what you have, seeing is there excess waste? Is there stuff that we don't need? Is there stuff that maybe we could be doing better? And, you know, to Glenn's point about that right sizing, the main thing that you're paying for in VMC is that compute. So it's a really good opportunity to take a look at your workloads and see, what do I really need to be using from a compute perspective? And now that there's a monetary value to that, let's go ahead and make sure that it's accurate and not being wasted.
Well, and I like that idea of it makes you think about things beyond being an operator, because I'm sure you probably, when you guys start going through, start discovering, yeah, there's things that can be deleted and wasted, but you probably find gaps in some SLAs on, hey, was this actually being monitored, or is anyone backing this up? You know, those types of conversation, because when you do replatform it, maybe you make some changes to the backup or the DR strategy. And now that's going to bring up, you know, of why does this VM exist kind of conversation.
Yeah, no, exactly. We've had that conversation with several customers. Not the original one we're talking about with the rack cluster, but another one that was huge, tons of Oracle, tons of rack. And we dug into it and said, okay, great. You've got these databases. That's actually really hard to lift. Let's talk about the app layer. And when it came down to it, the production app was running on a single VM. So you get this extremely highly available database that's really tough to lift, but not really justified because the app's it's only as available as HAs can give it. So now we can talk about breaking some of that down. Like, can you reclaim some licensing? Like, there's a lot you can do with that.
Well, and that licensing reclaim is always a fun one, because rack, I know no one pays list, but list is like $25,000 a core. And if you're paying that, you know, back, if you're paying that, you know, and this was deployed 15 years ago, then maybe that made sense. But nowadays, if you've got vSphere HA, which can fire off pretty quickly, is it worth making that licensing spend to get your SLA on a once in a blue moon a couple minutes tighter, or get your patch windows completely non-disruptive? Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but these are always a good time, anytime you're having to talk to the app layer, to start revisiting some of those assumptions, as well as making sure, like you said, the supporting applications and the supporting areas outside of it also have the equivalent assumptions.
So did you gentlemen have any takeaways from your previous migration experiences that you're now incorporating into your future migrations?
I would say, you know, certainly just as you go through things, I mean, there's only so much that you can really prepare yourself for. And there's always going to be something that comes up that is a little bit unexpected. So each time, we go through one of these, it kind of adds to the list of make sure you put this down and make sure that you're trying to address everything that you can up front to limit the amount of on the fly things that you really have to deal with. That's been one of the most important things, I think, for each iteration.
I'd be curious if you gentlemen agree with this, but generally the way that I look at this, and we've kind of hinted towards this over the past 20 minutes of this conversation, but when I say it depends on what you're trying to do, right? If we are talking 100% replatform lift and shift into VMC, that is actually a very simple migration and low risk endeavor. It's pretty straightforward. There's a lot of people who know how to do it, a lot of tools and ways that we can manage that. The complex thing, the thing that you need to go into knowing it's going to take a couple iterations to get right, because no amount of pre-planning is going to see everything that can break, is when you try to run a true hybrid cloud where you have an active data center inside some part of the world in AWS, and then your active operations on premises, and those are forever going to stay online, and you're trying to manage workloads kind of coexisting and moving between those two. That's where all the most complexity comes in, because you have to rationalize operations, not just on like a, this is my cluster environment, but you really have to think about things from a, this is how we do business, and these types of workloads run over here, and these types of workloads run over there, and you know, here's the procedure for deciding when they move back and forth type thing. So I don't know, do you agree with that? Does that kind of flow with the conversations you've had in the past year?
Yeah, that's interesting. I both agree and disagree with it. Yeah, so
I love it.
Yeah, so the part of me that agrees is if you did have a customer that would completely evac, right? But by and large, we have customers that do what I would call a 90% evac, right? You have 90% of your stuff in VMC, but you still have a couple of colos, right? You still have one rack of equipment because of, you know, some reason, right? We've got customers that maybe it's a dedicated VPN connections I need or something like that. So you do operate in this hybrid model, even in an evac, a lot more than I'd like to do. So yeah, it definitely gets challenging for sure. Cause then you're thinking about, now I have to think about, again, that network connectivity we already talked about. How do I back up? How do I back up now? I've got some colo stuff I got to deal with. How do you know what things go where? So yeah, I think that's where that's the kind of world a lot of our customers live in. I don't know if Adam, if you disagree with me.
No, I totally agree. I mean, certainly I think that's been the major thing that I've seen. I've seen less of sort of that continual hybrid, almost like, you know, kind of each being their own independent, you know, half and half type data center where, you know, we're running half the stuff here, half the stuff over there. It's either kind of existed because there's a reason for it to stay while the majority of it's running in VMC, or, you know, again, back to that DR use case, the big one is we're running everything in production on-prem, and we're protecting it up into VMC. And there, the bigger question is, okay, we do have a disaster. Everything has to fail over into VMC. Now, how do we get to our stuff? Which is another big networking question. So it really gets back to Glenn's, you know, it depends what's your use case statement. So
let's pull on that DR thread a little bit, because that's something that we haven't really discussed in this yet. We kind of flushed to death the two biggest use cases that we see in the service, honestly, data center evacuation and then hybrid operations. Those are the big two pillars that we see customers come in. The other two that I would like to get your input on are disaster recovery, business continuity, and then the last one, which we'll close this out on, is next gen apps and then hybrid operations. So with disaster recovery, it sounds like you have some customers that are actually using VMware disaster recovery, the add on to VMC on AWS.
Yeah, we have a combination of customers that are using the site recovery add-on that, you know, for anybody who's familiar with Site Recovery Manager on-prem, it's essentially, you know, the same service, but built for within VMC. But HCX itself does also have a disaster recovery component to it. It doesn't give you that automation and the orchestration and the ability to, you know, test things in a bubble and create recovery plans and things like that.
The easy button.
It doesn't give you the easy button, but, you know, it does allow you to go in and select VMs, protect them, and then you can select groups of VMs and recover them as needed. So it's sort of a little bit more manual process, but still giving you the comfort that you have your data running somewhere else that you can cut over in the event of, you know, a planned or unplanned disaster.
So given the current marketplace, you know, we kind of have two options when it comes to VMware Cloud and AWS, right? We have hot DR, where you maintain an SDDC just sitting up inside the cloud waiting for a disaster to happen, with continuous replication under the covers, either HCX or VSR, protecting the actual VM. And then, you know, disaster happens, big easy button, everything fails over. But there's also, we have a rich portfolio of backup partners. And I have run across the odd account that has chosen to just take that data and back it up to some cloud adjacent data store. And their recovery plan is they'll spin up an SDDC, you know, spin up a copy of Veeam, and then start a restore. And it'll take a week, but they're saving a ton of money by not maintaining a secondary site. Have you seen any of that?
Paul can correct me if he has seen this. I personally haven't seen any customers doing that. But yeah, I have seen some of those use cases or some of that information out on the web. Definitely, I know recently there was a post that AWS and Anthony Spiteri from Veeam worked on similar to that, where it was a very interesting use case. And while I haven't seen that with a customer, it definitely caught my attention as, you know, something I've always thought about, which is, you know, how do you spin up a data center on the fly? Of course, you are dealing with longer RTOs, but to your point, Glenn, you don't have to deal with the whole, you know, kind of hot standby data center that you're there paying for, whether you need it or not. So it comes down to really a financial calculation. What RTO can you live with, and
that's
what
exactly
price
right.
point can you live with?
Yeah, that is it. I mean, there are some customers where that RTO might make sense, and for others, there's just absolutely no way it would be a possibility. So
one other weird kind of conversation I had with a customer was looking at doing was for DR replication on some of the tier two workloads that were kind of storage heavy, was just do they were looking at wanting to do, this was for a vSAN, this was an on-prem, but I guess it could translate potentially to cloud, was have an FTT equals zero policy that they land in, and then if they actually ever activate DR, convert that policy to an actual protection level, which would then grab a bunch more storage and hosts.
Yeah, I would not advise that a customer ever do that, and here's why. It's a disaster recovery plan, and with FTT zero, you have no net. So if that worst day were to happen and your hardware were to suffer a hiccup 5 minutes before you needed to hit that button, you would be very sorry that you chose to save $10.
This was data storage. This was selectively done for certain tier two workloads that were bulky, was I think the big caveat.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. And that's why I asked the question, honestly, because it's a use case that I've heard a lot from our data protection partners. It's not something that I've found customers willing to do yet because of what we discussed. The amount of time involved in that spin up is... Look, it's significant savings, not having to have an online environment. You know,
yeah, versus just replicate into a cold store is probably the cheaper. That's the better way to shave nickels.
Like you're talking orders of magnitude, but it's orders of magnitude that fundamentally can't be afforded because your recovery windows are just too long. So I was curious if there was anyone actually taking advantage of it.
But food for thought
for the listeners for sure.
Yeah. Well, actually, Adam hasn't seen it yet, as he stated, but he's about to, because I'm finishing the statement of work right now for a customer that is doing that, right? They're a retail client, and their stores can operate with the main data center offline for days because they have to be able to, right? They've got tons of retail locations. And so this is exactly what they're doing.
Ask and you shall receive. See?
So Adam will be doing it soon.
Looks like a great reason to sync up with our friends at Veeam.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe that's a great place for me to land this with the last kind of pillar that we drive from a corporate side of this equation. And that's that hybrid app use case. And I'll take a second and just explain this just to set the stage exactly what these words mean when I say them. What I'm talking about is taking advantage of the fact that VMC is sitting inside the AWS cloud, which means that you have the option of choosing whether or not you want to do a replatform, rehosting, or any of the traditional 5Rs, or just doing a traditional VM move. So it gives you this new way of doing business where, you could potentially take a look at that migration and say, do I want to move this SQL server or do I just want to move this database out into AWS RS and forget about it and never think about it again, right? And then maybe even when I want to replatform that back on premises, I can keep it in the platform thanks to vSphere and some of those new extensions that we have inside VMware. It's just a different way of doing business, right? Being able to sit there and say, I'm going to take my enterprise VMs and I'm going to put them inside this SGDC. And then I'm going to, with those VMs, leverage some AWS Lambda with, Route 53 and online cloud security services and mesh all of this together, right? Containers and Kubernetes with VMs, with SaaS platforms into whatever it is that the customer needs. VMC gives you a way to do this in a way that you've never been able to do it before. We've talked about it as an industry, but fundamentally, these platforms all exist as ecosystems that are very much designed to keep you in them and not play with anything else. So it's kind of a unique ability to lean into that and leverage hybridity as an architecture. So I'm curious, having explained that, can you guys think of anything where you've seen customers who have maybe inadvertently done this without realizing it?
I actually have a question down that same vein, probably just for you, hot off the presses. I had a customer ask me yesterday. They're looking at VMC for a DR solution, but one of the guys there was like, "Hey, we're doing a lot of Kubernetes. Can I integrate and access NSXT directly from my Kubernetes stuff to use this as kind of like, because I've got this capacity anyway, it's DR, but if I'm not using it, can I leverage the compute? And how integrated can I get with that NSXT backend?" And I was like, that's a really good question. I don't know.
That is a good question. And that's where some of the way that our integration works, we do support containers and Kubernetes inside VMware Cloud and AWS. Today, it works based on Pivotal. So you need to have a Pivotal Essentials installation in order for us to support it. The underlying network that is integrated, right? It is the NSX guest. So there is some service insertion and some Kafka extensionality that I don't think will work because as a tenant administrator, you don't have full control of the NSX domain, obviously. But from a high level, basic orchestration automation, absolutely, that stuff does work. And we out of band also do get those higher level network functions. They're just managed kind of not as one clean step, as I understand it, because, you know, if we wanted to do distributed firewall work, that's not going to be automated, right? That's going to be done through the DFW integrations inside VMC on AWS. So today it's kind of a half step. Yeah, it works, but not 100% there. And that's honestly why we don't push it. You don't see us out there kind of pushing this as a prime time workload. We are absolutely working on it, and it does work, right? I actually published a blog post today that detailed how the vSphere CSI driver works inside VMware Cloud and AWS. So anyone who does have this installation and or just wants to play around with cluster API for vSphere, all of that stuff is there and it's ready to go. But what you're touching on, Paul, that's really the difference between like what we have today and what we were talking about at VMworld last year and where we're headed with Tanzu and some of our next gen around the corner visions is really kind of putting a bow on all this stuff and making it so that, yes, the answer to that question would be yes, absolutely, it just works.
And we've certainly seen customers who, you know, just by the nature of needing that AWS account to spin up the SDDC have started, you know, looking at, okay, now I know that I have this ecosystem where I can just create services on demand for whatever it is, you know, that maybe previously I had to reach out to a sales exec for and go through this long process. So it is very compelling to start looking at things like, you know, DNS and load balancing and all those other aspects that you can really just kind of play with if you want to and see how it works. At the same time, we've also seen customers who have kind of known that they want to look into some of that refactoring down the road and maybe aren't quite there yet and just want to get those workloads closer so that they can run them in VMC, you know, take the cost savings of also closing a data center. Yeah. And while they're up there, that it, you know, it being sort of like an intermediate step to getting to that replatforming process.
Totally. And you know what? Honestly, we also see customers who are doing it in reverse, right? We see customers who use it as that intermediary step to get out of the cloud because the, you know, this is the fun joy for anyone who's in consulting, working with any kind of hyperscaler in world. It's always a matter of either migrating in or out. You're never stationary. Because it's an economic decision and the factors behind that change constantly. So what makes sense from a business perspective to just buy a solution today, 2 years from now, it's actually going to make more sense for them to own that technology and it'll move back on premises or in a colo or something like that. So it's constantly just moving through these replatform rehosting as it makes sense as technology goes through these iterations.
And then Round Tower will be there to help you move, right?
Exactly.
I like it. Well, Paul, Adam, thank you so much for joining us this week. This has been a pretty interesting conversation around migration. If you guys have any blog posts that you've written or any content that you've shared about some of these migration stories, please let me know. I'd love to add those to the show notes of this podcast page. And I want to welcome you guys to come back anytime you do more of these migrations and you want to share some of your lessons learned. I can never get enough of that stuff. Those things are interesting to me. I love to hear the good, the bad, the ugly, and that kind of stuff. That kind of stuff is cool to me. So thank you so much for joining us today. Glenn, John, anything else before we let these gentlemen go?
What is this "you went to lunch in Raleigh and I didn't hear about it" crap?
Yeah, good point. Good point. You know, I think we were going to ask you that time, but I knew you were busy. It was definitely something.
Yep. Yeah, just yeah. Okay. Keep going. Yeah, I see how it is.
Shame.
Yeah, you're right, you're right.
How dare you?
I hear you, brother. I hear you.
I blame Pete.
All right, yeah, we'll get you all together. Lunch on Adam next time. That's what I'm going to say. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go, and so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Glenn, Paul, and my man Adam for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Oh, yeah.
Enough of this.
jibber jabber.